Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Bankruptcy Relief and Misconduct Disqualification Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 18, 2013, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Bullock v. Bank Champaign, a bankruptcy case. Bankruptcy law provides debtors a means of discharging their otherwise unmanageable debts, but there are exceptions. This case involves an exception for debts incurred through a type of misconduct known as defalcation. The question here concerns the degree of trustee misconduct required to trigger the defalcation exception and whether such conduct can include actions that did not actually result in a loss of trust property. To discuss the case, we have Zee Rosen, who is an adjunct assistant professor of law at New York Law School. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Rosen.
The case I'm going to be discussing today, as noted, is Bullock v. Bank Champaign, which is about whether or not certain debts can be discharged in bankruptcy. So just to give you a little bit of background, the goal of bankruptcy generally is to get a discharge of your debts. So debts are generally dischargeable unless they're not dischargeable by terms of a statute, and these are called exceptions to the discharge. Most exceptions to a discharge are for specific types of debt, so well-known example would be student loan debt, also domestic support obligations, drunk driving, etc. However, there are a few exceptions which instead look to the conduct that led to the debt. So, for instance, fraud which leads to the extension of credit is not dischargeable. Debt resulting from willful and malicious conduct, which is more than just a financial motive, is not dischargeable. Debts which result from embezzlement or larceny are not dischargeable. And fraud or defalcation while acting in fiduciary capacity are not dischargeable. So this case is about what defalcation is, effectively what defalcation means within the context of Section 11 U.S.C. 523A4. So just going to discuss the facts of the case briefly, some of the legal issues, and what happened to the argument. So this is not the simplest case fact-wise. Going on close to 30 years ago, Randy Curtis Bullock became the trustee of a trust for his father. I believe it was Randy Curtis Bullock Senior Trust Number 4. The trust's only asset was a life insurance policy in his father's name, and Bullock and his siblings were the trust beneficiaries. As trustee, Bullock was only allowed to borrow from a trust to pay life insurance premium and to satisfy a withdrawal request. Nonetheless, Bullock borrowed from a trust a number of times. Bullock asserted that this was at his father's urging, and this was to make loans to himself and his mother to purchase certain things, certain real estate, etc. All the loans were repaid with interest. Nonetheless, when two of Bullock's brothers learned of the existence of a trust and that their brother had made loans out of a trust, they sued him in Illinois State Court. They claimed that Bullock had breached his fiduciary duty by taking loans out, and they were granted summary judgment. The court ordered that Bullock pay $250,000 in damages for lost profits and $35,000 in attorney's fees. And then Bank Champaign replaced Bullock as trustee of a trust. Now, in 2009, Bullock filed for bankruptcy under Chapter 7, trying to get a discharge of a debt for the lost profits. Now, the bank, a successor trustee, started an adversary proceeding where they argued even if the debts did not arise out of fraud, they did arise out of defalcation, and since these are also acts that were done in a fiduciary capacity, they are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. The bank moved for summary judgment in bankruptcy court, and the bankruptcy court granted the motion. This was appealed to the district court, which affirmed the bankruptcy court, and this was appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. And that court held that the debt was not dischargeable because Bullock's conduct was objectively reckless in violating his duties to the trust, even if he might not have been aware of those duties. So this was appealed to the Supreme Court on the issue of what defalcation means. So this is a word which has kind of slipped out of contemporary usage. But just to give a very, very brief history, the word has been bankruptcy law almost as long as we've had bankruptcy law in America. In the Second Bankruptcy Act passed in 1841, it was said that defalcation by a public official was not dischargeable. And this seems likely due to the fact that in 1838, a whole rash of defalcations by public officials were discovered, whereby federal officers who did not return money they collected to the federal treasury most notably Samuel Swartwout, who failed to return over $1 million in 1838 funds. So the sources of the time were fairly clear, did not involve intent, but they didn't really go much beyond that. Fast forward to 1937, there's a decision by Judge Learned Hand saying that defalcation may mean some portion of misconduct, but not saying it necessarily required that. And the famous quote from Vist is, "All we decide is that when a fiduciary takes money upon conditional authority, which may be revoked, he is guilty of defalcation even though it may not be a fraud or embezzlement or even misappropriation." So a three-way circuit split has developed as to what defalcation means. The position of Neil's four circuits, including the 11th Circuit, is that it means objective recklessness, effectively when a trustee breaches his fiduciary duty. So this is a position taken by the 5th, 6th, and 7th Circuits, as well as the 11th Circuit now. Then there is what's called the extreme recklessness standard. This is the standard that says we're going to use a standard similar to the standard requirement for securities fraud of extreme recklessness, which comes close to fraud. And this is the standard used in the 1st and 2nd Circuits. And finally, there's a standard that says we don't look at intent, and rather the conduct. So the 4th, 8th, and 9th Circuits say the question of whether a trustee failed to account for funds held in trust, not whether he had any bad intent to constitute recklessness or anything along those lines. So this leads to two questions. What mental state is required for X to qualify as defalcation, and what X constitutes defalcation? So a mens rea question, actus reus question. The expectation going into oral argument was that this would be a battle over the mens rea requirement. Certainly most of the circuit courts looked at the issue recently say it's a mens rea question, and actus reus kind of plays a secondary role. And so counsel for Bullock argued extreme recklessness as a standard, the 1st and 2nd Circuit standard that says it has to be something close to fraud to qualify as defalcation. And then they argued that as a secondary argument, even if it's not a question of intent, that it was a question of failure to account, and Bullock had returned the principal he had borrowed to the trust along with interest. And something of a surprise, the court was immediately skeptical of any mens rea requirement. And the court started asking, well, we're looking at intent to defraud, or we're looking at intent to commit the act. You know, clearly Bullock intended to borrow the money, and so that seems to be a relevant question of intent, and since that's an obvious question, it's not a relevant one to know. So instead, the court focused pretty quickly on this reus component of what acts constitute defalcation. And so in questioning Mr. Byrne, who was a counsel for Bullock, the court focused on two related questions: whether a trust has to incur a loss for conduct to be defalcation, and then whether lost profits are considered a loss for purposes of defalcation. And so counsel for Bullock, of course, argued that the trust had been made whole, but some justices were skeptical, noting that profits were owed to the trust, and this led to some justices pointing out that not a question of liability, but dischargeability. That clearly Bullock was liable to the trust for the lost profit, but the question was whether that liability was dischargeable in bankruptcy. So even though the court had already been dismissive of the argument that there was a mens rea requirement of defalcation during petitioner's argument, counsel for Bank Champaign was unwilling to let go of her primary argument, which was the argument the 11th Circuit had made and had in her holding, that defalcation is objective recklessness, which effectively boils down to a violation of a trustee's fiduciary duty. And the court indicated pretty quickly that it was much more interested in the actus reus question, and they asked Bill Bensinger, who was a counsel for Bank Champaign, whether he was trying to avoid the actus reus question by focusing on mens rea. Now, Mr. Bensinger was also caught a little flat-footed when he was asked as to whether defalcation requires a loss of a trust. He originally said that, yes, it did require a loss of a trust, but he backed away from that. The Solicitor General also appeared at oral argument, and he appeared on behalf of a United States trustee. So his argument was that there was no mens rea requirement for defalcation, which is a similar argument to the one the court seemed sort of leaning towards, and that he said that diversion of trust assets constituted defalcation, even where the base amount was originally paid back with interest. So the smart money is that the argument that the U.S. trustee embraced going in, that there is no intent requirement for defalcation, is going to succeed, and that argument was definitely bolstered by oral argument where the court seemed much more sympathetic to the argument that there is no intent requirement for defalcation. Much less clear is whether lost profits are going to be considered part of failure to account. And some of the justices seemed more sympathetic to Mr. Bullock. They noted that the bank seemed to have unclean hands and Mr. Bullock seemed to have acted fairly honestly. Or as others pointed out, violation of fiduciary duties by a trustee is a serious problem, even if he returned a principal. If you want to know more about this issue, I have an article coming out in the winter 2013 issue of American Bankruptcy Law Journal, and available now on SSRN, entitled Discharging Fiduciary Debts, in which I argue along the lines the Supreme Court seems likely to apply for an intent requirement to defalcation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.